strange country. 255. Since a man is rightly said to have grown old in a strange country, if he has not broken up the ground of his faults. Of pride there are two kinds, one carnal and two spiritual, which is the worst. For it especially attacks those who are seen to have made progress in some good qualities. Chapter 13. Of the different ways in which all these faults assault us. Although, then, these eight faults trouble all sorts of men, yet they do not attack them all in the same way. For in one man the spirit of fornication holds the chief place. Wrath rides roughshod over another. Over another, vainglory claims dominion. In another, pride holds the field. And though it is clear that we are all attacked by all of them, yet the difficulties come to each of us in very different ways and manners. Chapter 14. Of the struggle into which we must enter against our faults when they attack us. Wherefore we must enter the lists against these faults in such a way that everyone should discover his besetting sin and direct his main attack against it, directing all his care and watchfulness of mind to guard against its assault, directing against it daily the weapons of fasting, and at all times hurling against it the constant darts of sighs and groanings from the heart, and employing against it the labors of vigils and the meditation of the heart, and further pouring forth to God constant tears and prayers, and continually and expressly praying to be delivered from its attack. For it is impossible for a man to win a triumph over any kind of passion, unless he has first clearly understood that he cannot possibly gain the victory in the struggle with it by his own strength and efforts, although in order that he may be rendered pure, he must night and day persist in the utmost care and watchfulness. And even when he feels that he has got rid of this fault, he should still search the inmost recesses of his heart with the same purpose, and single out the worst fault which he can see among those still there, and bring all the forces of the spirit to bear against it in particular. And so, by always overcoming the stronger passions, he will gain a quick and easy victory over the rest, because by a course of triumphs the soul is made more vigorous, and the fact that the next conflict is with weaker passion ensures him a readier success in the struggle, as is generally the case with those who are wont to face all kinds of wild beasts in the presence of the kings of this world, out of consideration for the rewards, a kind of spectacle which is generally called Pancarpus, 256. Such men, I say, direct their first assault against whatever beasts they see to be the strongest and fiercest, and when they have dispatched these, then they can more easily lay low the remaining ones, which are not so terrible and powerful. So, too, by always overcoming the stronger passions, as weaker ones take their place, a perfect victory will be secured for us without any risk. Nor need we imagine that if anyone grapples with one fault in particular and seems too careless about guarding against the attack of others, he will be easily wounded by a sudden assault, for this cannot possibly happen. For where a man is anxious to cleanse his heart and has steeled his heart's purpose against the attack of any one fault, it is impossible for him not to have a general dread of all other faults as well, and take similar care of them. For if a man renders himself unworthy of the prize of purity by contaminating himself with other faults, how can he possibly succeed in gaining the victory over that one passion from which he is longing to be freed? But when the main purpose of our heart has singled out one passion as the special object of its attack, we shall pray about it more earnestly, and with special anxiety and fervor shall entreat that we may be more especially on our guard against it, and so succeed in gaining a speedy victory. For the giver of the law himself teaches us that we ought to follow this plan in our conflicts, and not to trust in our own power, as he says, "Thou shalt not fear them, because the Lord thy God is in the midst of thee, a God mighty and terrible. He will consume these nations in thy sight by little and little and by degrees. Thou wilt not be able to destroy them altogether, lest perhaps the beasts of the earth should increase upon thee. But the Lord thy God shall deliver them in thy sight, and shall slay them until they be utterly destroyed." 257. Chapter 15. How can we do nothing against our faults without the help of God, and how we should not be puffed up by victories over them. And that we ought not to be puffed up by victories over them, he likewise charges us, saying, Lest after thou hast eaten and art filled, hast built goodly houses and dwelt in them, and shalt have herds of oxen and flocks of sheep, and plenty of gold and of silver and of all things, thy heart be lifted up, and thou remember not the Lord thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, and was thy leader in the great and terrible wilderness. 2:58. Solomon also says in Proverbs, When thine enemy shall fall, be not glad, and in his ruin be not lifted up, lest the Lord see, and it displease him, and he turned away his wrath from him. 2:59, i.e., lest he see thy pride of heart, and cease from attacking him, and thou begin to be forsaken by him, and so once more be troubled by that passion which by God's grace thou hast previously overcome. For the prophet would not have prayed in these words, Deliver not up to beasts, O Lord, the soul that confesseth to thee. 2:60, unless he had known that because of their pride of heart, some were given over again to those faults which they had overcome, in order that they might be humbled. Wherefore it is well for us both to be certified by actual experience, and also to be instructed by countless passages of Scripture, that we cannot possibly overcome such mighty foes in our own strength, and unless supported by the aid of God alone, and that we ought always to refer the whole of our victory each day to God himself, as the Lord himself also gives us instruction by Moses on this very point. Say not in thine heart, when the Lord thy God shall have destroyed them in thy sight, For my righteousness hath the Lord brought me in to possess this land, whereas these nations are destroyed for their wickedness. For it is not for thy righteousness and the uprightness of thine heart that thou shalt go in to possess their lands, but because they have done wickedly, they have destroyed at thy coming in. 261. I ask what could be said clearer in opposition to that impious notion and the impertinence of ours, in which we want to ascribe everything that we do to our own free will and our own exertions? Say not, he tells us, in thine heart, when the Lord thy God shall have destroyed them in thy sight. For my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. To those who have their eyes opened and their ears ready to hearken, does not this plainly say, When your struggle with carnal faults has gone well for you, and you see that you are free from the filth of them, and from the fashions of this world, Do not be puffed up by the success of the conflict and victory, and ascribe it to your own power and wisdom, nor fancy that you have gained the victory over spiritual wickedness and carnal sins through your own exertions and energy and free will. For there is no doubt that in all this you could not possibly have succeeded unless you had been fortified and protected by the help of the Lord. Chapter 16. Of the meaning of the seven nations of whose lands Israel took possession, and the reason why they are sometimes spoken of as seven and sometimes as many. These are the seven nations whose lands the Lord promised to give to the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt, and everything which, as the apostle says, happened to them in a figure, 2:62, we ought to take as written for our correction. For so we read, When the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land, which thou art going in to possess, and shall have destroyed many nations before thee, the Hittite, and the Girgashites, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, seven nations much more numerous than thou art, and much stronger than thou, and the Lord thy God shall have delivered them to thee, thou shalt utterly destroy them. 2:63. And the reason that they are said to be much more numerous is that faults are many more in number than virtues, and so in the list of them the nations are reckoned as seven in number. But when the attack upon them is spoken of They are set down without their number being given. For thus we read, and shall have destroyed many nations before thee. For the race of carnal passions, which springs from this sevenfold incentive and root of sin, is more numerous than that of Israel. For thence spring up murders, strifes, heresies, thefts, false witness, blasphemy, surfeiting, drunkenness, backbiting, buffoonery, filthy conversation, lies, perjury, foolish talking, scurrility, restlessness, greediness, bitterness, clamor, wrath, contempt, murmuring, temptation, despair, and many other faults, which it would take too long to describe. And if we are inclined to think these small matters, let us hear what the apostle thought about them, and what was his opinion of them. Neither murmur ye, says he, as some of them murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer, and of temptation. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them tempted and perished by the serpents. 2:64. Of backbiting. Love not backbiting, lest thou be rooted out. 2:65. And of despair. Who despairing have given themselves up to lasciviousness, unto the working of all error in uncleanness. 2:66. And that clamor is condemned as well as anger and indignation and blasphemy, the words of the same apostle teach us as clearly as possible when he thus charges us, let all bitterness and anger and indignation and clamor and blasphemy be put away from you with all malice. 2:67. And many more things like these. And though these are far more numerous than the virtues are, yet if those eight principal sins, from which we know that these naturally proceed, are first overcome, all these at once sink down and are destroyed together with them with a lasting destruction. For from gluttony proceed surfeiting and drunkenness, from fornication, filthy conversation, scurrility, buffoonery, and foolish talking, from covetousness, lying, deceit, theft, perjury, the desire of filthy lucre, false witness, violence, inhumanity, and greed, from anger, murders, clamor, and indignation, from dejection, rancor, cowardice, bitterness, despair, from acidity, laziness, sleepiness, rudeness, restlessness, wandering about, instability both of mind and body, chattering, inquisitiveness, from vainglory, contention, heresies, boasting, and confidence in novelties, from pride, contempt, envy, disobedience, blasphemy, murmuring, backbiting. And that all these plagues are stronger than we can tell very plainly from the way in which they attack us. For the delight in carnal passions wars more powerfully in our members than does the desire for virtue, which is only gained with the greatest contrition of heart and body. But if you will only gaze with the eyes of the Spirit on those countless hosts of our foes, which the apostle enumerates where he says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. 2:68. And this which we find of the righteous man in the 90th Psalm, 1,000 shall fall beside thee, and 10,000 at thy right hand. 2:69. Then you will clearly see that they are far more numerous and more powerful than are we, carnal and earthly creatures as we are, while to them is given a substance which is spiritual and incorporeal. Chapter 17. A question with regard to the comparison of seven nations with eight faults. Germanus. How then is it that there are eight faults which assault us, when Moses reckons the nations opposed to the people of Israel as seven? And how is it well for us to take possession of the territory of our faults? Chapter 18. The answer. How the number of eight nations is made up in accordance with the eight faults. Serapion. Everybody is perfectly agreed that there are eight principal faults which affect a monk, and all of them are not included in the figure of the nations for this reason. Because in Deuteronomy, Moses, or rather the Lord through him, was speaking to those who had already gone forth from Egypt, and been set free from one most powerful nation. I mean that of the Egyptians. And we find that this figure holds good also in our case, as when we have got clear of the snares of this world, we are found to be free from gluttony, i.e., the sin of the belly and palate. And like them, we have a conflict against these seven remaining nations, without taking account at all of the one which has been already overcome. And the land of this nation was not given to Israel for a possession, but the command of the Lord ordained that they should at once forsake it and go forth from it. And for this cause our fasts ought to be made moderate, that there may be no need for us through excessive abstinence, which results from weakness of the flesh and infirmity, to return again to the land of Egypt, i.e., to our former greed and carnal lust, which we forsook when we made our renunciation of this world. And this has happened in a figure, in those who, after having gone forth into the desert of virtue, again hanker after the flesh pots over which they sat in Egypt. Chapter 19. The reason why one nation is to be forsaken while seven are commanded to be destroyed. But the reason why that nation in which the children of Israel were born was bidden not to be utterly destroyed, but only to have its lands forsaken, while it was commanded that these seven nations were to be completely destroyed, is this. Because however great may be the ardor of spirit, inspired by which we have entered on the desert of virtues, yet we cannot possibly free ourselves entirely from the neighborhood of gluttony, or from its service, and, so to speak, from a daily intercourse with it. For the liking for delicacies and dainties will live on as something natural and innate in us, even though we take pains to cut off all superfluous appetites and desires, which, as they cannot be altogether destroyed, ought to be shunned and avoided. For of these we read, take no care for the flesh with its desires. 270. While then we still retain the feeling for this care, which we are bidden not altogether to cut off, but to keep without its desires, it is clear that we do not destroy the Egyptian nation, but separate ourselves in a sort of way from it, not thinking anything about luxuries and delicate feasts, but, as the Apostle says, being content with our daily food and clothing. 271. And this is commanded in a figure in the law in this way. Thou shalt not abhor the Egyptian, because thou wast a stranger in his land. 272. For necessary food is not refused to the body without danger to it and sinfulness in the soul. But of those seven troublesome faults we must in every possible way root out the affections from the innermost recesses of our souls. For of them we read, let all bitterness and anger and indignation and clamor and blasphemy be put away from you with all malice. And again, but fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not so much as be named among you, or obscenity or foolish talking or scurrility. 273. We can then cut out the roots of these faults which are grafted into our nature from without, while we cannot possibly cut off occasions of gluttony. For however far we have advanced, we cannot help being what we were born. And that this is so, we can show not only from the lives of little people like ourselves, but from the lives and customs of all who have attained perfection, who even when they have got rid of incentives to all other passions, and are retiring to the desert with perfect fervor of spirit and bodily abnegation, yet still cannot do without thought for their daily meal and the preparation of their food from year to year. Chapter 20. Of the nature of gluttony, which may be illustrated by the simile of the eagle.